I've always loved the Sabbath songs, but...
God can heal, and ever man together he will make a way.
Yeah, my preacher rewrite that song. I've always loved Sabbath songs my whole life. Really sad ones. I like some of that Celtic stuff that Becky likes but doesn't listen to, and I don't listen to it either because it's dangerous. I love the sound of it. It's haunting, and then it goes right through you, and you can get sucked into it. And I know what it's like to love, to be sucked into the place that some of those things can suck you into. And I'm not even against listening to some of those songs now and then. Depends on who you are, what the moment is, and maybe why you listen to them. But then there might always be a better, more worthwhile song to listen to than some of them. But I've heard a lot of those songs, and when Judah was talking, probably more than one came to mind, but this one, it was on the radio on the top 40 of the year my wife and I got married, because I can remember hearing it at the restaurant that I worked at. And I got that job, I was told, I got the job over the phone the day before I got married, and the guy told me I could come to work, and I said, I'm getting married tomorrow. Would it be okay if I came in a few days from now? He said, sure. And so, I remember that, and I remember being in that place. And I remember all the broken hearts I met there. And I remember that song playing. How much of the music in the world is about brokenness. Lost love. Broken hearts. What percentage do you suppose?
Well, there wouldn't be any country music.
Any country music?
There wouldn't be any country music.
Country music?
Just wipe that out.
It doesn't seem like it, although I think there are a few country songs that actually don't bring up broken hearts or lost love. I think there are a few. But the ones that come to mind are those ones. Now we live in a two-story house. You know what the rest of that song is? I don't know if that's the title of the song. Might be. Everything broken. Everything. And,
even if Jesus can heal your achy, breaky heart.
And, old dogs and children and watermelon wine. You know that one? It would probably come to me if I thought about it for a little bit. This guy, in the song, he loves old dogs and children and watermelon wine. Why? Well, because women think about themselves when men folk hang around. That sounds like lost love. That sounds like, maybe she acts like she loves me, but when I'm not around, I don't matter. But he finds solace in old dogs. The thing about old dogs, one thing I've learned about them is that they're going to die. Sooner or later, they're old, right? all dogs and children. Children oftentimes don't judge so much, especially old people. They're more quick to judge other children, but they sometimes judge old people, and some of the most piercing words about myself have been spoken to me by little children. But I do appreciate that. Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, right? Old dogs and children, and the heat, water, and corn wine. That kills the pain of what? Lost love and loss in general. And the whole song is about just wallowing in that stuff. And one of my brothers used to wallow, he loved that song. I think he bought the Conway Twitty album that song was on. If it wasn't Conway Twitty, correct me, Clark, or Bill, who are experts on the subject. Not of Conway Twitty, but on who did what and when it was done. And you got the words wrong, and that's not the tune, and all of that stuff, which I appreciate. So, that's a great testimony, Judith.
Yeah.
And it's not just a great testimony because of just, you said what you said. It's because you said it. And it's because you are who you are. And it's because that is yours and you expressed it and it comes from you that God made in his own image. And I got a new conception of being created in God's image this week from a discussion I was having with somebody else who's probably as crazy as I am and as obsessed with certain things in different ways as I am. And it's not a new conception exactly, but he started thinking of people as, being made in God's image as people are like his selfie God took him. So. And now, you can go off the rail theologically in a nanosecond any day of the week, right? But do you think we're made in God's image?
Yeah.
What do you think that means? Is there anything about the physical structure of the human being that in any way could reflect something about God's image? Do you think so, Becky? I'm always concerned with Becky thinks because she knows theology and she won't always say what she's thinking, and that sometimes troubles me, like that look that Dean gets on his face. And so while I'm up here, I look here, I see that face, I see that face, and I see this face, and then I go, Lord, help me forget about the faces. Because, it's you I gotta deal with. And that's frightening, but no, actually it's not, because you love me, and you showed me that, and so I know I make all kinds of mistakes, I screw up, I get things wrong, I probably even make heretical statements. By the way, having some heretical thoughts is not the same as being a heretic, with the emphasis on tick. It's a disease-bearing parasite, which none of you are, by the way. So, do you think God wanted to express something about himself by creating you? Anybody think so? Show of hands, I'm feeling insecure.
Can you repeat the question?
Can't do it, Dave. I do too. So, this friend of mine, he brings up this notion that, we're all like God's selfies. And I gotta say, I love my friend, but the thought of it isn't necessarily what I just automatically warm up to. But what I knew he was trying to express, I did warm up to. The whole selfie thing
But people take selfies to share themselves.
Yes, they do. And God created you for, well, he wants you to know him and enjoy him forever. He wanted your existence, your being, to express something from him to everybody else. And only you can do that. Nobody else can do that. Nobody else can be you. So, in some mysterious way, we all possess uniquely God's image. And it's an inexhaustible image, so I don't think anybody has to fear that there wasn't any uniqueness to be displayed in them that has something to do about God and his image. We've all got it, and we're not the same, but we are so much like each other. So,
everybody lies. I learned that from, was it Gregory House?
House, the show called House. I wouldn't suggest watching the reruns necessarily, but kind of interesting. And one thing that makes him a great diagnostician is that he knows and says frequently, everybody lies. So, are you trying to get me a late grade come up?
Not necessarily.
Okay, I just want to make sure whether I was reading it right. So,
but he does look very ready.
Yeah, all you gotta do is say, come up and then, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, I'm gonna make a couple of comments about broken hearts and struggles. I don't really know if all the theologians and marvelous pastors in the world, though probably a whole bunch of them have tried and come up with a whole bunch of different explanations, and necessarily precisely outline why it is some people go through a lot of pain over, in some cases, things that other people think they shouldn't have had a lot of pain about, which, and I've maybe even done that to people. But you know, a person's pain is their pain. They're in pain, they're feeling pain. Pain is real. You know, even what's called psychosomatic pain, emotional pain, even if it's not physical, does hurt. And oftentimes it's accompanied by physical pain, but even if it's in your head, right? Well, wait, but if it's in your head, well, then it must be in your head. Not somewhere out there that isn't real. And so even if it's whatever psychosomatic means, the pain is real pain. So if somebody's in pain, is it going to help me or them if I blame them for being in pain because the cause of the pain doesn't seem to be one that I deem acceptable? Like, oh, you got run over by a car. Oh, it's okay, you've been hurt. You don't have anything broken, there's no holes in you, you're not bleeding. Stop hurting! How's that work? Any of you ever feel pain when you weren't bleeding or run over or had a broken bone or some physical injury? Anybody else just tell you to just get over it? Yeah. Well, what do you think, that's right? People tell people to just get over stuff. I've probably done that too. I didn't just get over the things people told me I should just get over. I didn't stop hurting because they explained to me that there shouldn't be any pain because of the thing. It didn't help me. Well, it did help me. It helped me think, I'm in pain, I hurt, and it's my fault. Thank you. I'm beginning to understand. Yeah, great. Now I can blame myself and hurt more. I can have new pain because I can blame myself for having my pain. And by the way, personally, not speaking about your pain, but I can, from my own perspective, admit to you that I did cause a lot of my own pain and that I didn't necessarily have to experience all of the pain that I experienced. So I actually think I'm responsible for some of the pain I experienced, but not all of it. We can make our pain worse, can't we? So if we do and we start to understand that we're doing it and how we did it, it's good to begin to teach yourself not to do that. Right? But it's not about blame. It's about, it's actually better in many cases to feel less pain if the pain can be alleviated. Right? In the case of a burden for the lost, it's not good to alleviate that pain. Because that pain drives you to bring love to them, which will heal their pain. But you have to learn how to bear that pain the right way so that it doesn't kill you, or that it doesn't make you bitter when they don't respond as quickly as you want, and make you want to kill them, or at least cause them pain. The scriptures say that God does not willingly afflict the sons of men. At the very least, I think we should not willingly afflict other people then too. If what he sends us with to them adds to their pain for a period of time, we need to not shy away from that. We need to not enjoy that it causes them pain. And we need to be seeking in love their salvation, not the increase of their pain. If God doesn't enjoy human suffering, I don't think we should. We shouldn't rejoice at human suffering, but we shouldn't try to make it all just stop so that people or even us just feel better, because that doesn't actually bring healing to things. When a drunk drinks enough that he doesn't feel the pain of his lost love and everything else, is that helping him? So just feeling less pain isn't necessarily a good thing, right? So, I really appreciate the things that Jacob said. And when he said, "My dad told me I'm proud of you, Jacob," I could have almost just fallen to pieces. It is the hugest thing for anybody, and we're all somebody's kid, aren't we? To hear from your dad, "I am proud of you." It's so huge, but what it takes to say it seems so small that it can be completely overlooked for a lifetime. To the point where proud fathers never, ever tell their kids that. I mean, fathers that are proud of their kids, they're also maybe proud people. But some of them are actually proud of their kids and they never say it. Some of them are proud of their kids and they just talk to their kid like there's nothing about them, that they're proud all the time. And then some of them just are not proud of their kids. It's a big problem either way. And it's a big job for the kid to try to figure out which it is and why it's that way. And it's also very painful, dangerous, and nearly lethal to spend too much time trying to figure all of that out. So, anyway, our desire for ourselves, either a desire for ourselves or for other people, should be driven simply by a desire to just bring whatever pain we can see to as quick an end as possible. That doesn't really serve them well, and it doesn't serve God's purposes very well. And wanting to reach people with the truth is not a painless endeavor. Just look at Messiah. It's kind of what he came to do, isn't it? Reach people with the truth of God's love for them and his healing power and their purpose, right? That's what he came to do. Could anyone say that wasn't pain? So in following him, there's pain, but I think I remember what I was going to say before. I don't think we can figure out about ourselves or other people just exactly why they had, how much pain they did, and just exactly why they were in that pain for the length of time they were in that pain. And why it is that sometimes when it's finally resolved, God didn't do it 23 years earlier. And it continued. Now, I'm not saying that it's God's fault. I'm not even saying that it was God's will necessarily that it lasts as long as it did. God does allow things. But I do know about my own pain and my own morose wallowing and brooding over things, like moving from Wisconsin. And I didn't just lose the place that I live in. across a bunch of old people that were my dear friends that cared about me. I lost some kids that were my friends, but ultimately I don't think they were anywhere near as important as those old people were. I lost the places I loved to go. Everything was just gone. And I was morose. I was brooding. I was in agony and grieving, and I wouldn't be consoled. I don't admire that about me. But it's the way I was. I brooded. I was in pain for 5 years. It was 5 years before I could look at myself and say, I don't think I'm actually in pain about that now. That's not the same as saying all the things to it were resolved, by the way. So, and then there were other things. I struggled with a lot of stuff. I blamed myself for my struggles. My blaming myself made my pain more worser. And I don't know if I blamed other people. I know here and there I blamed other people for all kinds of things. I certainly blamed them for trying to cheer me up many times. I blamed them for telling me to just be happy. That's not the same as trying to cheer someone up. Some people think it is, but when you tell someone to just be happy, you're not really trying to cheer them up. What you're telling them is, I'm sick of you, and I want to feel better when you're around. And you being you and the way you are makes me feel bad, and I resent you for that. And that's really encouraging. that goes, oh, I'm going to be happy. Because I don't know if I can bear one more person rejecting me like that. So I'm going to just be happy. So then you start acting happy. Now, I never did that. You probably know. I never did. I never just walk around pretending to be happy. I couldn't do that. There's something about me that hates abject insincerity so badly that it took me years just to answer the phone and not cause the person on the other end to learn to do it and to decide I should. To not cause the person on the other end, whose fault it was not that I was the way I was, to experience what I was experiencing just because being genuine requires you to make everybody else suffer along with you. So, you know, but this is what I know. God is very faithful. And whatever I've suffered, the things I suffered, they're just my fault that I shouldn't have suffered. I brought it on myself. The things I suffered that seemed to just come on me from wherever that I didn't understand, the things that happened to me that I couldn't control, like moving from Wisconsin, like my brother disappearing the day we moved from Illinois to California, on which I was also thinking, now I'm going to be 2,000 miles away from the place I love, instead of 439 miles, and yes, I knew how far it was. And my brother is gone. Some of that wasn't my fault. My brother did rematerialize sooner than I remembered that he did. But that same brother pointed out that, well, when you're young, you know, sometimes how long something is, it just, you know, he thinks he showed up in maybe 3 months. Well, if you're 10, and the brother that was at least one time your absolute favorite, just gone one morning when you're going to move across the country, that's kind of upsetting. And 3 months, it seemed like 30 years. But no, I was wrong. I thought it was like a year. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know where he went. The note just said, well, hey, everybody's got to split some time. Guess now is as good a time as any. See you around. That's the note he left for my parents. I'm a father now, and I wonder what that felt like for them. I know what it felt like for me. God is faithful, and I do understand this, that whatever pain we all go through, whether someone can seemingly reasonably blame us for it, or whether it had nothing to do with us and it was imposed on us, or whether it came from a psychosomatic thing, which I've come to believe is actually, it is in your head, not outside your head, so maybe it's real. Even if it shouldn't happen, but there's something about all of it. Even if you should have gotten over it 30 years before you finally did, that God makes use of. And I can understand things about certain people because of what I went through. I value that highly. And I don't think those things, and I don't understand everything about all persons. I understand some things really well about some persons because of things I went through. I wouldn't trade my pain and not be able to understand those things. I wouldn't go back and say, Lord, I just want to go back. I just don't want to have the pain. And then, I don't care. I won't be able to understand those people. I'd rather just not. I'd rather it's just all gone. I didn't suffer that stuff. And so, I don't know, you can send somebody else to understand those people. I wouldn't do that if I had the choice. There's a purpose in all of it, even the stuff that's our fault. If one of you said, God causes all things to work together for the good, that's a very easy concept to accept and to think you understand, and it's a very difficult concept to come to the conclusion about that it's really true about the stuff we didn't want to happen to us, that we blame other people for, that we think were imposed on us, and maybe they were. It was Richard Wurmbrand that I saw, that guy that movie is about. I've met him more than once. You know, they beat on his feet when he was in prison. He couldn't wear shoes when he was 80. And he said, this may not be a perfect quote. He said, people say God causes all things together to work together for the good for those that are love him and are called according to purpose. And he says, but that's not true. And of course, everybody's thinking, well, someone might think, oh, he's lying. He's twisting the scripture. And he goes, talking about that stuff, all of it, all things. And it's really easy to tell somebody that God uses all things together for the good while they're suffering, and you just want them to get over it so that you can feel better. And you know, it is possible probably for all of us to want somebody to get over something, really, because we just want to feel better. He does. He causes it all of them to work together for good. And it can be really, really hard to really embrace that and really understand that and really say it to yourself in the moments when what you don't want to happen to you is happening to you. But if we do, on some of those moments, the truth of it being worked to the good might happen in the next moment, because when you are thinking that way and you're looking for the opportunity instead of coming up with a complaint, the things that are unfolding in front of you look different. and you can take a hold of an opportunity to do good instead of to mope. And I am saying this as someone who has done a lot of moping. You've probably all seen me mope. So, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled about Judah's testimony. I'm thrilled about the man Judah is. I'm thrilled about the creation he is that God made. I'm thrilled that he's one of God's selfies. And that Jacob is, and that all of you are, and that through the agony and the ecstasy and the glory and the shame, God's doing wonderful things. I'm thrilled. And I want to say it's okay, whatever it is, it's okay. Even if it's not okay, it's okay. God can handle it. God can bring you through it. As the case may be, God will forgive you for it. God will help you with it. God will teach you by it. God will pick you up out of it. God, whatever it is, God's doing all sorts of things with and about it. And there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are inside Yeshua. But there is a lot of love. And there's an enormous flood of grace. And grace isn't just unmerited favor, it's power to be what God has called you to be. And so, as I'm talking, I'm almost beginning to feel something like happiness. Something it feels almost good. This may be one of my encouraging partial messages rather than one of the discouraging ones. As I'm talking, I'm feeling encouraged. Wow. I pray that it could have the same effect on others. I am aware of it. I love to talk, so it could just be me experiencing talking. But it could be God doing something. And I hope it is. And if he is, it's great. And, you know, sometimes things feel good. Come on up, Greg. You want this? It makes you feel more official.
I'll take your hand.
This is the same model Yeshua used in Jerusalem.
I recall.
The German name.
I think this thing's designed for a bigger head.
Oh, that fuzzy. Huh. Wonder what that was. It's gone. Well, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Frequently when Mr. Lundgren says anything with my name in it, I just assume he's saying, Craig, get up here. And that there is no other choice, but I am aware that he's actually only asking, so. But
if I have anything or whatnot. And usually I, you know, I come up with my Bible and, you know, the notes that I've written, but there's nothing in here on any message or whatnot, and that's fine too, because I actually really enjoy being up here, and I don't exactly feel like a fool when I'm up here, but you know, your mileage may vary. But I just wanted to say that you know, I do actually believe that that God has been speaking to me, at least through lots of the things that have been going on in the last, you know, forever, and you know, some of the things that I've seen, you know, even recently and today. And I think the main theme is really the way that we see ourselves and the way that we see things around us. And, you know, it's always really hard to remember exactly which word comes first in the passage. You know, is it we're transformed by the renewing of our minds, or renewed by the transforming of our minds?
Transformed by the renewing
of our minds. Got it. Okay, great. Well, it's been wonderful.
It's 12:2.
Yeah. Romans 12:2. Well, let's just open up to it, because this way, you know, if I see it, I can just remember it and not have to worry ever again about which order it comes in. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. That's right on money. A couple of months ago, I watched this film. And, you know, typically when I see anything that looks like a science fiction film or military-esque or whatnot, you know, I get interested no matter how silly or ridiculous the plot may be. The film is called Spectral, which, no, I don't recommend you watch because it's just pointless, but it's a film about these spectral beings that people are starting to see, and, you know, humans have to fight them with their, you know, military physics-grade weapons and whatnot. But in the movie, there's a part where there's a physicist, there's the head of the Defense Department, and they're discussing with each other what these things could be. And the head of defense, she says that she's, you know, it must be cloaking technology. They're invisible, we can't see them, and you know, the Russians or the Chinese must have come up with this crazy new, you know, weapon technology. And the physicist is looking at it, and he's saying that it's obviously just a spectral anomaly. And then they're discussing, like, the natives in the area think that they're, you know, they're the dead, they're the ghosts and everything. And so the physicist, you know, he says, we're all trained to see things based on our profession. So, you know, because I'm a physicist, this is what I see, and your defense, and this is what you see, and those natives think that it's this other thing. And, you know, I won't explain the rest of the movie, but that's the most important part, is, you know, the way that we're trained to look at things really dictates exactly how we actually see the world around us. And, you know, I thought the last song was going to be Open the Eyes of My Heart, but then it went on. But that song, I really appreciate that song. And then I, you know, I thought about it, and I always wondered, what exactly does it mean to open the eyes of our heart? And you know, I always get really emotional and really enjoy the song, and I think about how we tend to look in on ourselves in a way that can be self-condemning or you know, just overall negative. But that's not the way that God sees us. We his heart and his love for us transcends any sort of understanding or self-perception that we can have. And we need to be able to, as individuals in his image, look at ourselves, opening the eyes of our own hearts the same way that, you know, God's heart sees us. And that I find to be a rather important thing. And then, of course, if you can see my brain, there's just all sorts of things swirling and scattered around here. But this morning we went through the Torah portion, and it was it's actually a passage I've spoken up here before about. But let's see, it was, I have it here somewhere. That's why I'm in Genesis when I want to be in Exodus. So many pages here. So, you know, they're discussing all the stones and everything that they're making into this into these garments for the priests. And I have underlined in my Bible here 28:36. Which says, "You shall also make a plate of pure gold, and shall engrave on it, like the engravings of a seal, holy to the Lord." And every time that I read that, I think about how, you know, I go into who I was, and the Lord reminds me that I'm not that individual anymore. I don't have any reason to condemn myself for the things that I've done, because today I stand here holy to the Lord, because this is who He has made me to be. And I'm really grateful for that. But in case you were wondering, yes, you're also holy to the Lord. and he wants you to open the eyes of your hearts and to see you the same way that He sees you. And, you know, just go on living with a transformed and renewed mind and all that good stuff. But, I think I'm pretty much out. I hope that you learned something today. God bless you. Shalom, shalom. Where's the fuzzy?
Where's your microphone?